On the show today, Rich and I discuss the challenges facing the new CEO of Starbucks, and we have a cocktail made for us by ChatGPT. I'm your host, Brad Jackson, and you're listening to the March 27th, 2023 edition of Coffee and Koshan. So, Rich, everybody drinks coffee these days. I live on coffee. If not for coffee, I would not be here. And I'm sure you are the same. Coffee is ubiquitous. Starbucks is the king of coffee. And whether you like Starbucks or not, they have done a good job of making coffee widely available and quickly. They're... CEO for a long time, Howard Schultz, the guy who took them from a small little local coffee shop in Seattle to the global behemoth they are, is stepping down, and there's a new guy who's taking over, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of his name, so I'm going to apologize ahead of time, but it's something like Laxman Narasimham, and he just goes by Lax, so we're going to call him Lax. Lax is a guy who was CEO of Pepsi for a while. And to prepare for his role as CEO, he decided to go into Starbucks, train as a barista, and work in stores all around the world and sort of see Starbucks from the perspective of a regular behind-the-counter barista dealing with customers all the time, which I actually think is a brilliant idea. And honestly, more top CEOs and other companies should do that. More often, isn't that, there's like a show about that or something, isn't there, on like CBS, like where
Undercover Boss?
There it
or something
is. Yeah,
like
that's
that.
It. Yeah, something like that. So I think this is a great idea. What's interesting is that there was a great article in Wall Street Journal about this a few days ago, sort of detailing how he's going to rule Starbucks and how it's different than Howard Schultz and all that sort of stuff. But what I found really interesting is you know, he has a lot of problems facing him that Howard Schultz never had. When he started this big behemoth years ago, coffee was different. Coffee shops were different. But also, people expected different than what they expect now. And it, as we look at the restaurant world, whether that's a coffee shop like Starbucks, or it's you know, your favorite Tex-Mex place down the corner, or it's the bagel shop around the you know, around the way. Restaurants are different now in a post-COVID world, and a lot of those differences aren't good. I'll give you one example. There's a great bagel shop down the street from me, and it's a bunch of New York expats, so they make great bagels. You know, it's part of the whole problem of Brooklyners and San Franciscans moving to Austin, but their bagels are great, so I won't begrudge them that. But what's interesting is that they've had a real problem post-COVID, because if you are like me, where you live close enough that you can walk in there and go to the restaurant to order bagels, then you get bumped to the back of the line, and the people who get put to the front of the line are the people getting their bagels online, like via, you know, an app, a delivery app. But what frustrates me about that is that if I'm a customer and I go into a store, I've made the effort to come to you, right? That took effort on my part. I'm not just laying on my couch ordering delivery, which I do from time to time. Everybody does. That's fine. But if I've made the effort to come into your store, I think I should get the attention for doing that. And should get priority treatment for doing that, because I have made the point to come to your business. And whether that's Starbucks or it's a bagel place or it's a restaurant, the restaurants today are having to figure out how to deal with this whole delivery mechanism and be a real store again. Because when everything was closed for COVID and all they did was deliveries, that made plenty of sense. People just ordered their stuff on whatever app it was. Some person came to pick it up and it got delivered to their house. But now that we're going back to this sort of weird hybrid post-COVID world, if you go by a Starbucks today, you'll notice that there are a lot more people in the drive-thru. And there are a lot of people who do that order through the app thing, and they go and they pick it up. And the reason I don't like to do that personally, if it's something like coffee or a bagel or whatever, is that first of all, I want it hot. So I want to go there and pick it up and know that it was, you know, just poured in a cup for me. But also, if you've noticed, when you do these delivery apps, there's always fees and fees and then some more fees and then some extra taxes and then some more fees added on there. And so if you make the point to go into the restaurant, you're saving yourself some money to do that. But you don't get the same kind of priority treatment that the people who order on an app or order via delivery do, which bothers the hell out of me as someone who still likes to go to restaurants. Have you encountered any of this at all?
Yes. So pre-COVID, ordering through the app could sometimes be a hack. For example, I would use the Chick-fil-A app to order, like if my middle daughter had soccer practice, a lot of times she would get Chick-fil-A on the way home, you know, not just to pump my kids full of fast food, but it was already late. There was homework to be done, showers to be taken. So it just made sense. And so pre-COVID, Chick-fil-A always has huge lines. They manage them very well. But if you order through the app for a curbside, which was a weird thing, you know, now everybody just takes curbside for granted. But at this time, it was a way to kind of streamline the process. So, you know, you're supposed to hit a button. It's like, okay, I'm in the parking lot now, make my food. But if you're like 5 minutes away, you could just hit that button and your food would be ready as soon as you pulled into the parking lot. But to your point, now it's everything. And I've had experiences where I've gone in to a place that had a drive-through or a lobby, and you know, the line is just backed up for miles, and you're like, oh, I'm gonna just walk in and it'll be quicker, but it's not, because they've gotten so good at the drive-throughs. And then also, there still seems to be a service crunch in that yes. People don't want to work. So you see the people, and for those of us who worked in the food service industry, you see how many tables and how much work each individual is juggling, whereas pre-COVID, you would have a bigger team so that each individual wasn't stretched so thin. But I'm with you. And, you know, during COVID, it was almost... I mean, yeah, we still wanted our restaurant food, but it was almost kind of an act of service, because you wanted to make sure that your favorite restaurants were still there after things opened back up. But then somewhere along the way, people got accustomed to lukewarm food that was not at its prime, and everyone is just kind of stuck with that. And then the fees. There was a St. Patrick's Day a couple of years ago where I was like, yeah, I'll get a pastrami corned beef sub from this place down the street. And I was kind of busy, and I looked at like Grubhub or Uber Eats or whatever, and it was going to end up being like $25 for just a sub. And it's like, no, I can carve out the 15 minutes to go to the store to get this myself.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. So I had a bout of COVID last week, which thankfully was much shorter than the last time I had it. But one day when I was home by myself and I realized I had run through my food supplies in the fridge, I was like, I'll order something. It was $25 for me to get 3 breakfast tacos and a cup of coffee. $25. And like, I'm like, where did this all come from? And when you look at it, it's like $10 of added fees before you ever do a tip.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's absurd. Like, it's not, it shouldn't be, the difference shouldn't be that much for you to just get a meal delivered. And frankly, that encourages me, like you, to go into the restaurant. So when you go into the restaurant, you're right. They do have a service issue. There are not as many people working. This is something that Lax is going to have to deal with at Starbucks. It is harder to get people to work in food now. That is just something that all these businesses are dealing with. Whether you are a sit-down restaurant, or you're a fast food place, or you're a coffee shop or whatever, it is hard to find people these days. And Starbucks in particular is having a problem where several of their shops are trying to unionize to try and get better contracts for their people. And Starbucks has retaliated in a sense and shut some of those places down. And that's I think the focus of a lawsuit right now. But When you look at how restaurants are having to deal with this sort of post-COVID kind of return to somewhat normal, they haven't figured it out yet. And whether it's Starbucks or it's McDonald's or it's one of these other places, these restaurants are going to have to figure out how to operate in this new post-COVID age where, you know, apps and technology are part of that. I did notice that McDonald's opened up a fully automated McDonald's recently where there are no people. And you don't go in and order from someone at a counter. You order on a screen and your food is delivered by a robot. That's bizarre. Like, that's really weird to me. I'm not sure I want my food created and prepared entirely by AI, but I guess that's where we might be moving to with the service crunch, which brings up something really interesting. I saw something recently that 80% of jobs, 80% might be impacted by AI tech like ChatGPT. You and I have a friend who we've had on the show who makes sandwiches, a sandwich of history. He does this thing, everyone, I think it's on, is it Fridays, where he has ChatGPT make him some weird sandwich?
Yes. Yeah, and, it's on Fridays.
One of them involved bananas, which is really bizarre. Anyway, so some of them are very strange. Sometimes they end up being tasty. So you and I had this idea, like, let's figure out what happens when ChatGPT makes us a cocktail. And lo and behold, ChatGPT made us one entitled the Smoky Maple Sour, which was really good.
It was surprisingly fantastic. It's one that I will drink again, not just for purposes of research. I have an account with ChatGPT. I've used it a little bit in my day job. It's not like a secret, like, don't do this. It's actually like, hey, if you can streamline. And so, like, I was having to put together a user manual for this thing called an Allen Bradley 525. It's a variable frequency drive that's used to power or to control motors. In this context, it's in the food packaging industry. And it's like, hey, chatbot, write me a user manual for setting up a 525. Now, it completely botched it because it didn't know how to do it. But it gave me enough of the steps where I could go in and fill in the details without having to write every sentence, like, make sure your wires are grounded, you know, make sure you plug it in. So I could just go in and do the particulars and save time. So that's one area where I think the fear of chatbots and AI, they've got a lot of learning to do before they can actually do tasks as opposed to just appear to do tasks. But on this cocktail, it hit it out of the park, and I have no idea. Now, I did choose from several different options. I prompted it four or five times. I did bourbon twice, gin once or twice, tequila, and the one that we went with was the one that I had pretty much all of the ingredients at home and didn't have to go buy anything or make anything because they get involved. It's like, oh, well, you know, make this, you know, pear syrup to go with your whatever. I didn't want to do that. So we did the smoky maple sour, which was 2 ounces of bourbon, an ounce of lemon juice, half ounce of maple syrup, two teaspoons of Islay scotch, which I didn't have, but it even included options. It's like, if you don't want as much of a smoky flavor, you could use a different scotch. And I'm not a huge scotch guy. And I have two bottles that I bought for our inaugural episode, or maybe it was the second episode when we were discussing scotch versus bourbon. So I just went with those, although I have some Elijah Craig Toasted Barrel, which is Elijah Craig bourbon that's been aged in barrels that have been toasted. And that gives it a little bit more of a smoky flavor. And you put all the ingredients in a dash of Angostura bitters. I'm not sure if I said that, but you throw it all in a shaker, shake it up with ice, strain it into a glass with fresh ice, and just incredibly delicious. Just incredibly delicious. Now, you had one also.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed it. I here's the thing. When you put your life in the hands of a robot or an algorithm, you never really know what you're going to get, right? Whether that's something you're doing at, you know, at work or whatever. You're probably going to get something that is kind of what you wanted, but not really. And you sort of see that in the crazy stuff that ChatGPT makes for Sandwiches of History sometimes, but it's interesting that this was actually really good. And the only thing I had to go buy with this was the scotch, because I was out of scotch at my house because I had drank it all. you're right. It was approachable because I have most of those things in my bar all the time anyway. And it was good. And I was surprised by that. So this begs the question. Were the programmers who put together ChatGPT alcoholics? Or were they at least all former bartenders in college? I mean, you got to kind of wonder, because, you know, if you talk to experts about these sort of things, they always say, oh, well, you know, it can only do what it was programmed to do. It won't take over the world because it wasn't programmed to take over the world. You know, they'll say something like that. Well, if it was programmed to do alcohol, it was programmed pretty well, because yes, this turned out all right, which is good and scary all at the same time.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of just a play on a whiskey sour, but the whole, like, the addition of the scotch was just, I mean, that's, you know, you can say it's the algorithm, or, hey, you know, it was programmed, or maybe, like you said, maybe it was bartenders who programmed ChatGPT, but it was one of those little subtle steps that people take in the kitchen, in their bar, that is thoughtful. It doesn't seem algorithmic.
Right. It was surprising.
Yes. And the other recipes that I didn't make were kind of the same, and I've saved all of them, and might come back to some. You know, maybe this will become a recurring feature for us, but it really, like, they all looked good. It really just came down to a matter of what ingredients do I want. And, like, there was one that I mentioned to you, it had a it required peach liqueur, and I just don't make a lot of fuzzy navels or anything, so I don't keep, you know, peach schnapps around the house.
Yeah, no, I was surprised by this. But that begs the question, Rich. So we've sort of talked about how technology is impacting, you know, the food service industry, how technology has impacted, you know, the making of drinks. Are you concerned about whether that's ChatGPT or the next version of that, you know, robots and AI taking away the sort of, you know, creativity of food?
I can see that happening, especially as the other thing that happened during COVID is you see a lot of people just surprisingly, like, started restaurants, because that was something that they could actually open and work in so many places. So you had a lot of people who didn't have these backgrounds, and tools like this could be a boon to them for, you know, maybe you kind of knew how to make pizza, you started a food truck that did well enough, and maybe ChatGPT will help teach you how to make pizza. But are you really learning the skill that goes into coming up with those different odd pairings to really know why the things work versus just knowing that they do work? In other words, is it kind of removing the food science, the science of flavor that people learn as they go, and skipping them ahead to the end? But because they didn't learn those foundations, are they going to be able to go back and do it themselves? And I don't mean in the crazy, there's apparently, you know, now a cocktail competition. I saw some of it last night, and it's all just so crazy. You know, like, you can't just make a cocktail. You've got to make a cocktail where you also make, you know, vermouth pearls that emulate caviar or whatever. And it's like, okay, that's all well and good for TV, but, like, who the hell is going to do that at home? Yeah, like, nobody. And so you've got the, and I could see chatbot being good at the gimmicky stuff like that also, but is it complicated just for the sake of being complicated, or is it really, you know, breaking new ground creatively so that people can build on it, and so it can be taught to other people so that they can build on it? So, well, I guess.
Yeah. And here's the thing that I think, if you are a restaurateur, or you're trying to find you're a young kid right now, and you're listening, and thank you, and you're trying to come up with what you're going to do down the road, someone's always got to be the one making the food you eat. And right now, outside of maybe McDonald's, there aren't restaurants that are run by robots. They still take people to cut up onions. It still takes people to cook your food. It still takes people to do all those sort of things, know if it tastes good, all that sort of stuff. That yeah. still takes human beings. So in the end, a lot of that stuff, at least for the next generation or so, is probably safe from being fully taken over by robots.
Yeah, and you know, for a restaurant like McDonald's, which has evolved a lot over the years, I mean, they've got it down to a science where, you know, I forget some of the euphemisms. If you read about it, it's funny. You know, like there's no such thing as a microwave in a McDonald's kitchen. It's called the, you know, instant zapper or something like that. But you never use the word microwave. But they've got it down to where it's all kind of prepared. And so I could see how the robot concept would work at McDonald's, because you don't really have people back there using their eyes and ears to flip burgers and be like, okay, this is done. It's really just heating it up once it's at the restaurant. And as a result, we've all kind of accepted a somewhat lower quality, like, you know, what you're going to get when you go to McDonald's. And hopefully it hasn't been sitting in the steam tray overnight, as one of the last times I ended up at McDonald's and got a Big Mac and had some hockey pucks for my burger instead of, you know, even the low quality I was expecting when I ordered it. And so that works. But, you know, anywhere else, I mean, even like take like to stick with the fast food, how is AI going to be able to run like a Subway or a Jersey Mike's or something like that, where you've got all these different combos? And, you know, can you make robots that can spread on the right amount of shredded lettuce, you know, to customer specifications? It just seems like it would end up being more trouble than it's worth to have like an actual fully, like, not sentient, but responsive robot behind the counter who you can tell the robot, it's like, okay, well, I only want a little bit of shredded lettuce, but I want extra pickles. It seems like by the time you spend the money developing it, we would have been better off just giving people a raise to stand behind the counter and do the work.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, even when you think about what, you know, Hollywood thinks of robots, when you think of like R2-D2 or C-3PO or something, right, which are essentially walking around sentient robots, like neither of them would be very good working behind the counter at Jersey Mike's either. So in the end, if Hollywood can't do it, we probably can't do it ourselves.
No.
But I will say I was surprised by this cocktail. I think this is something we should revisit from time to time, because it was kind of fun. And I thought, like, you know, ChatGPT did a pretty good job coming up with something I like to drink.
Yes. Yeah, I definitely will. I will definitely revisit it, even if not for the show, even if just sometimes maybe in my personal life. Hey, let's see what you spit out and see what I can massage it into.
It works. All right. Well, thanks again, Rich. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Brad.